You told me I was meeting Raphael. I said you were meeting our master, said Mr. Walker. His eyes were vast and empty, so empty that Simon wondered if they had even meant to mislead him, or if they were simply programmed like robots to say whatever their master had told them to say, and were unaware of deviations from the script. And here she is. Indeed, Camille flashed a brilliant smile toward her subjugates.
Please leave us, Walker, Archer. I need to speak to Simon alone.
There was something about the way she said it, both his name and the word alone, that was like a secret caress. The subjugates bowed and withdrew. As Mr. Archer turned to walk away, Simon caught sight of a mark on the side of his throat, a deep bruise so dark it looked like paint, with two darker spots inside. The darker spots were punctures, ringed with dry, ragged flesh. Simon felt a quiet shudder pass through him.
Please, said Camille,
and patted the seat beside her.
Sit. Would you like some wine?
Simon sat, perching uncomfortably on the edge of the hard metal chair.
I don't really drink. Of course, she said, all sympathy. You're barely a fledgling, aren't you? Don't worry too much. Over time, you will train yourself to be able to consume wine and other beverages. Some of the oldest of our kind can consume human food with few ill effects.
Few ill effects. Simon didn't like the sound of that.
Is this going to take a long time?
He inquired, gazing pointedly down at his cell phone, which told him the time was after 10:30.
I have to get home.
Camille took a sip of her wine.
You do? And why is that?
Because my mom is waiting up for me, he thought. Okay, there was no reason this woman needed to know that.
You interrupted my date, he said. I was just wondering what was so important. You still live with your mother, don't you?
She said, setting her glass down.
Rather odd, isn't it? A powerful vampire like yourself refusing to leave home to join with a clan.
So you interrupted my date to make fun of me for still living with my parents?
Couldn't you have done that on a night I didn't have a date?
That's most nights, in case you're curious.
I am not mocking you, Simon.
She ran her tongue over her lower lip as if tasting the wine she had just drunk.
I want to know why you haven't become part of Raphael's clan.
Which is the same as your clan, isn't it? He thought.
I got a strong feeling he didn't want me to be part of it, Simon said. He pretty much said he'd leave me alone if I left him alone, so I've left him alone.
Have you? Her green eyes glowed. I never wanted to be a vampire, Simon said, half wondering why he was telling these things to this strange woman. I wanted a normal life. When I found out I was a daylighter, I thought I could have one, or at least some approximation of one. I can go to school, I can live at home, I can see my mom and sister.
As long as you don't ever eat in front of them, said Camille. As long as you hide your need for blood. You have never fed on someone purely human, have you? Just bag blood. Stale. Animal.
She wrinkled her nose. Simon thought of Jace, and pushed the thought hastily away. Jace was not precisely human.
No, I haven't. You will. And when you do, you will not forget it.
She leaned forward, and her pale hair brushed across his hand.
You cannot hide your true self forever.
What teenager doesn't lie to their parents? Simon said. Anyway, I don't see why you care. In fact, I'm still not sure why I'm here. Camille leaned forward. When she did, the neckline of her black silk blouse gaped open. If Simon had still been human, he would have blushed.
Will you let me see it?
Simon could actually feel his eyes pop out.
See what?
She smiled.
The mark, silly boy, the mark of the wanderer.
Simon opened his mouth, then closed it again.
How does she know?
Very few people knew of the mark that Clary had put on him in Idris. Raphael had indicated it was a matter for deadly secrecy, and Simon had treated it as such. But Camille's eyes were very green and steady, and for some reason he wanted to do what she wanted him to do. It was something about the way she looked at him, something in the music of her voice. He reached up and pushed his hair aside, baring his forehead for her inspection. Her eyes widened, her lips parting. Lightly, she touched her fingers to her throat, as if checking the non-existent pulse there.
"Oh," she said. "How lucky you are, Simon. How fortunate."
"It's a curse," he said. "Not a blessing. You know that, right?" Her eyes sparked.
"And Cain said to the Lord, 'My punishment is greater than I can bear.' Is it more than you can bear, Simon?"
Simon sat back, letting his hair fall back into place.
"I can bear it."
"But you don't want to." She ran a gloved finger around the rim of her wine glass, her eyes still fixed on him.
"What if I could offer you a way to turn what you regard as a curse into an advantage?"
"I'd say you're finally getting to the reason you brought me here, which is a start," he thought.
"I'm listening. You recognized my name when I told it to you," Camille said. "Raphael has mentioned me before, has he not?"
"He said you were the head of the clan and he was just leading them while you were gone. Stepping in for you like a vice president or something."
"Ah," she bit gently on her lower lip. "That is, in fact, not quite true. I would like to tell you the truth, Simon. I would like to make you an offer. But first, I must have your word on something."
"And what's that?"
"That everything that passes between us this night here remains a secret. No one can know. Not your red-headed little friend, Clary. Not either of your lady friends. None of the Lightwoods. No one."
Simon sat back. "And what if I don't want to promise?"
"Then you may leave, if you like," she said. "But then you will never know what I wish to tell you, and that will be a loss you will regret."
"I'm curious," Simon said. "But I'm not sure that I'm that curious." Her eyes held a little spark of surprise and amusement, and perhaps, Simon thought, even a little respect.
"Nothing I have to say to you concerns them. It will not affect their safety or their well-being. The secrecy is for my own protection."
Simon looked at her suspiciously. Did she mean it? Vampires weren't like fairies, who couldn't lie. But he had to admit he was curious. "All right, I'll keep your secret. Unless I think something you say is putting my friends in danger, then all bets are off." Her smile was frosty. He could tell she didn't like being disbelieved.
"Very well," she said. "I suppose I have little choice when I need your help so badly."
She leaned forward, one slim hand toying with the stem of her wine glass.
"Until quite recently, I led the Manhattan clan happily. We had beautiful quarters in an old pre-war building on the Upper West Side. Not that rat hole of a Hotel Santiago keeps my people in now. Santiago, Raphael, as you call him, was my second in command. My most loyal companion, or so I thought. One night, I found out that he was murdering humans, driving them into that old hotel in Spanish Harlem and drinking their blood for his amusement, leaving their bones in the dumpster outside, taking stupid risks, breaking covenant law." She took a sip of wine. "When I went to confront him, I realized he had told the rest of the clan that I was the murderer, the lawbreaker. It was all a setup. He meant to kill me so that he might seize power. I fled, only with Walker and Archer, to keep me safe. So all this time he's claimed he's just leading until you return." She made a face. "Santiago is an accomplished liar. He wishes me to return, that's for certain. So he can murder me and take charge of the clan in earnest."
Simon wasn't sure what she wanted to hear. He wasn't used to adult women looking at him with big tear-filled eyes or spilling out their life stories to him. I'm sorry, he said finally. She shrugged, a very expressive shrug that made him wonder if perhaps her accent was French.
It is in the past, she said. I have been hiding out in London all this time, looking for allies, biding my time. And then I heard about you. She held up her hand. I cannot tell you how. I am sworn to secrecy. But the moment I did, I realized that you were what I had been waiting for.
I was? I am?
She leaned forward and touched his hand.
Raphael is afraid of you, Simon. As well he should be. You are one of his own, a vampire. But you cannot be harmed or killed. He cannot lift a finger against you without bringing down God's wrath on his head.
There was a silence. Simon could hear the soft electrical hum of the Christmas lights overhead, the water splashing in the stone fountain in the center of the courtyard, the buzz and hum of the city. When he spoke, his voice was soft.
You said it. What was that, Simon?
The word. The wrath of... The word bit and burned in his mouth just as it always did.
Yes, God.
She retracted her hand, but her eyes were warm.
There are many secrets of our kind, so many that I can tell you, show you. You will learn you are not damned.
Ma'am,
Camille. You must call me Camille.
I still don't understand what you want from me.
Don't you?
She shook her head, and her brilliant hair flew around her face.
I want you to join with me, Simon. Join with me against Santiago. We will walk together into his rat-infested hotel. The moment his followers see that you are with me, they will leave him and come to me. I believe they are loyal to me beneath their fear of him. Once they see us together, that fear will be gone, and they will come to our side. Man cannot contend with the divine.
I don't know, Simon said. In the Bible, Jacob wrestled an angel and he won. Camille looked at him, with her eyebrows arched. Simon shrugged.
Hebrew school. And Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face. You see, you are not the only one who knows your scripture.
Her narrow look was gone, and she was smiling.
You may not realize it, Daylighter, but as long as you bear that mark, you are the avenging arm of heaven. No one can stand before you. Certainly not one vampire.
Are you afraid of me? Simon asked. He was almost instantly sorry he had. Her green eyes darkened like thunderclouds.
Me afraid of you? Then she collected herself, her face smoothing, her expression lightening. Of course not, she said. You are an intelligent man. I am convinced you will see the wisdom of my proposal and join with me.
And what exactly is your proposal? I mean, I understand the part where we face down Raphael, but what after that? I don't really hate Raphael or want to get rid of him just to get rid of him. He leaves me alone. That's all I ever wanted. She folded her hands together in front of her. She wore a silver ring with a blue stone in it on her left middle finger over the material of her glove.
You think... That is what you want, Simon. You think Raphael is doing you a favor in leaving you alone, as you put it. In reality, he is exiling you. Right now, you think you do not need the others of your kind. You are content with the friends you have, humans and shadow hunters. You are content to hide bottles of blood in your room and lie to your mother about what you are. How did you...
She went on, ignoring him.
But what about in 10 years, when you are supposed to be 26, in 20 years, 30? Do you think no one will notice that as they age and change, you do not?
Simon said nothing. He didn't want to admit he hadn't thought that far ahead, that he didn't want to think ahead that far.
Raphael has taught you that other vampires are poison to you. But it does not need to be that way. Eternity is a long time to spend alone. Without others of your kind. Others who understand. You befriend shadow hunters, but you can never be of them. You will always be other and outside. With us you could belong.
As she leaned forward, white light sparked off her ring.
stinging Simon's eyes. We have thousands of years of knowledge we could share with you, Simon. You could learn how to keep your secret, how to eat and drink, how to speak the name of God. Raphael has cruelly hidden this information from you, even led you to believe it doesn't exist. It does. I can help you.
If I help you first, Simon said. She smiled, and her teeth were white and sharp.
We will help each other.
Simon leaned back. The iron chair was hard and uncomfortable, and he suddenly felt tired. Looking down at his hands, he could see that the veins had darkened, spidering across the backs of his knuckles. He needed blood. He needed to talk to Clary. He needed time to think.
I've shocked you, she said. I know it is a great deal to take in. I would be happy to give you as much time as you needed to make up your mind about this, and about me. But we don't have much time, Simon. While I remain in this city, I am in danger from Raphael and his cohorts.
Cohorts? Despite everything, Simon grinned slightly. Camille seemed baffled.
Yes.
Well, it's just cohorts. It's like saying evildoers or minions. She stared at him blankly. Simon sighed. Sorry, you probably haven't seen as many bad movies as I have.
Camille frowned faintly, a very fine line appearing between her brows. I was told you would be slightly peculiar. Perhaps it is just that I don't know many vampires of your generation. But that will be good for me, I feel, to be around someone so young.
New blood, said Simon. At that, she did smile.
Are you ready, then, to accept my offer? To begin to work together?
Simon looked up at the sky. The string of white lights seemed to blot out the stars. Look, he said. I appreciate your offer, I really do.
Crap, he thought.
There had to be some way to say this without sounding like he was turning down a date to the prom. I'm really, really flattered you asked, but...
Camille, like Raphael, always spoke stiffly, formally, as if she was in a fairy tale.
Maybe he could try that, he said. I require some time to make my decision. I'm sure you understand.
Very delicately, she smiled, showing only the tips of her fangs.
5 days, she said, and no longer.
She held out her gloved hand to him. Something gleamed in her palm. It was a small glass vial, the size that might hold a perfume sample, only it appeared to be full of a brownish powder.
Grab that, she explained. Smash this, and I will know you are summoning me. If you do not summon me within 5 days, I will send Walker for your answer.
Simon took the vial and slipped it into his pocket.
And if the answer is no, then I will be disappointed. But we were part as friends.
She pushed her wine glass away.
Goodbye, Simon.
Simon stood up. The chair made a metallic squeaking sound as it dragged over the ground, too loud. He felt like he should say something else, but he had no idea what. For the moment, though, he seemed to be dismissed. He decided that he'd rather look like one of those weird modern vampires with bad manners than risk getting dragged back into conversation. He left without saying anything else. On his way back through the restaurant, he passed Walker and Archer, who were standing by the big wooden bar, their shoulders hunched under their long gray coats. He felt the force of their glares on him as he walked by and wiggled his fingers at them, a gesture somewhere between a friendly wave and a kiss off. Archer bared his teeth, flat, human teeth, and stalked past him towards the garden, Walker on his heels. Simon watched as they took their place in chairs across from Camille. She didn't look up as they seated themselves, but the white lights that had illuminated the garden went out suddenly, not one by one, but all at the same time, leaving Simon staring at a disorienting square of darkness, as if someone had switched off the stars. By the time the waiters noticed and hurried outside to rectify the problem, flooding the garden with pale light once again, Camille and her human subjugates had vanished. Simon unlocked the front door of his house. One of a long chain of identical brick-fronted row houses that lined his Brooklyn block, and pushed it open slightly, listening hard. He had told his mother he was going out to practice with Eric and his other bandmates for a gig on Saturday. There had been a time when she simply would have believed him, and that would have been that. Elaine Lewis had always been a relaxed parent, never imposing a curfew on either Simon or his sister, or insisting that they be home early on school nights. Simon was used to staying out until all hours with Clary, letting himself in with his key and collapsing into his bed at 2 in the morning, behavior that hadn't excited much comment from his mother. Things were different now. He had been in Idris, the Shadowhunter's home country, for almost 2 weeks. He had vanished from home with no chance to offer an excuse or explanation. The warlock, Magnus Bane, had stepped in and performed a memory spell on Simon's mother so that now she had no recollection that he had been missing at all. Or at least, no conscious recollection. Her behavior had changed, though. She was suspicious now, hovering, always watching him, insisting he be home at certain times. The last time he had come home from a date with Maya, he had found Elaine in the foyer, sitting in a chair facing the door, her arms crossed over her chest and a look of barely tempered rage on her face. That night, he'd been able to hear her breathing before he'd seen her. Now he could only hear the faint sound of the television coming from the living room. She must have waited up for him, probably watching a marathon of one of those hospital dramas she loved. Simon swung the door closed behind him and leaned against it, trying to gather his energy to lie. It was hard enough not eating around his family. Thankfully, his mother went to work early and got back late, and Rebecca, who went to college in New Jersey and only came home occasionally to do her laundry, wasn't around often enough to notice anything odd. His mom was usually gone in the morning by the time he got up. The breakfast and lunch she'd lovingly prepared for him left out on the kitchen counter. He'd dump it into a trash bin on his way to school. Dinner was tougher. On the night she was there, he had to push his food around on his plate, pretend he wasn't hungry, or that he wanted to take his food into his bedroom so he could eat while studying. Once or twice, he'd forced down the food, just to make her happy, and spent hours in the bathroom afterwards sweating and retching until it was out of his system. He hated having to lie to her. He'd always felt a little sorry for Clary, with her fraught relationship with Jocelyn, the most overprotective parent he'd ever known. Now the shoe was on the other foot. Since Valentine's death, Jocelyn's grip on Clary had relaxed to the point where she was practically a normal parent. Meanwhile, whenever Simon was home, he could feel the weight of his mother's gaze on him, like an accusation wherever he went. Squaring his shoulders, he dropped his messenger bag by the door and headed into the living room to face the music. The TV was on, the news blaring. The local announcer was reporting on a human interest story. A baby, found abandoned in an alley behind a hospital downtown. Simon was surprised. His mom hated the news. She found it depressing. He glanced toward the couch. His surprise faded. His mother was asleep, her glasses on the table beside her, a half-empty glass on the floor. Simon could smell it from here. Probably whiskey. He felt a pang. His mom hardly ever drank. Simon went into his mother's bedroom and returned with a blanket. His mother was still asleep and her breathing slow and even. Elaine Lewis was a tiny, bird-like woman with a halo of black curling hair, streaked with a gray that she refused to dye. She worked during the day for an environmental nonprofit, and most of her clothes had animal motifs on them. Right now, she was wearing a dress tie-dye printed with dolphins and waves, and a pin that once been a live fish dipped in resin. Its lacquered eye seemed to glare at Simon accusingly as he bent to tuck the blanket around her shoulders. She moved, fitfully, turning her head away from him.
"Simon," she whispered. "Simon, where are you?"
Stricken, Simon let go of the blanket and stood up. Maybe he should wake her up, let her know he was okay. But then there would be the questions he didn't want to answer, and that look on her face he couldn't stand. He turned and went into his bedroom. He had thrown himself down onto the covers and grabbed for the phone on his bedside table, about to dial Clary's number before he even thought about it. He paused for a moment, listening to the dial tone. He couldn't tell her about Camille. He promised to keep the vampires off her a secret, And while Simon didn't feel he owed Camille much, if there was one thing he had learned from the past few months, it was that reneging on promises made to supernatural creatures was a bad idea. Still, he wanted to hear Clary's voice, the way he always did when he had a tough day. Well, there was always complaining to her about his love life that seemed to amuse her to no end. Rolling over in bed, he pulled the pillow over his head and dialed Clary's number.
Chapter 2. Falling. So, did you have fun with Isabel tonight? Clary, her phone jammed against her ear, maneuvered herself carefully from one long beam to another. The beams were set 20 feet up in the rafters of the Institute's attic, where the training room was located. Walking the beams was meant to teach you how to balance. Clary hated them. Her fear of heights made the whole business sickening, despite the flexible cord tied around her waist that was supposed to keep her from hitting the floor if she fell. Have you told her about Maya yet? Simon made a faint, non-committal noise that Clary knew meant no. She could hear music in the background. She could picture him lying on his bed, the stereo playing softly as he talked to her. He sounded tired, that sort of bone-deep tired she knew meant that his light tone didn't reflect his mood. She'd asked him if he was all right several times at the beginning of the conversation, but he brushed away her concern. She snorted. You're playing with fire, Simon. I hope you know that. I don't know. Do you really think it's such a big deal? Simon sounded plaintive. I haven't had a single conversation with Isabel or Maya about dating exclusively. Let me tell you something about girls. Clary sat down on a beam, letting her legs dangle out into the air. The attic's half-moon windows were open, and cool night air spilled in, chilling her sweaty skin. She had always thought that shadow hunters trained in their tough leather-like gear, but as it turned out, that was for later training, which involved weapons. For the sort of training she was doing, exercises meant to increase her flexibility, speed, and sense of balance, she wore a light tank top and drawstring pants that reminded her of medical scrubs. Even if you haven't had the exclusivity conversation, they're still going to be mad if they find out you're dating someone they know and you haven't mentioned it. It's a dating rule. Well, how am I supposed to know that rule? Everyone knows that rule. I thought you were supposed to be on my side. I am on your side. So why aren't you being more sympathetic? Clary switched the phone to her other ear and peered down into the shadows below her. Where was Chase? He'd gone to get another rope and said he'd be back in 5 minutes. Of course, if he caught her on the phone up here, he'd probably kill her. He was rarely in charge of her training. That was usually Maris, Kadir, or various other members of the New York Conclave pinch-hitting until a replacement for the Institute's previous tutor, Hodge, could be found. But when he was, he took it very seriously. Because, she said, your problems are not real problems. You're dating two beautiful girls at once. Think about it. That's like rock star problems. Having rock star problems may be the closest I ever get to being an actual rock star. No one told you to call your band Salacious Mold, my friend. We're Millennium Lent now, Simon protested. Look, just figure this out before the wedding. If they both think they're going to it with you and they find out at the wedding that you're dating them both, they'll kill you. She stood up. And then my mom's wedding will be ruined, and she'll kill you. So you'll be dead twice. Well, three times, technically. I never told either of them I was going to the wedding with them. Simon sounded panicked. Yes, but they're going to expect you to. That's why girls have boyfriends. So you have someone that takes you to boring functions. Clary moved out to the edge of the beam, looking down into the witchlight illuminated shadows below. There was an old training circle chalked on the floor. It looked like a bullseye. Anyway, I have to jump off this beam now and possibly hurdle to my horrible death. I'll talk to you tomorrow. I've got band practice at 2, remember? I'll see you there. See you. She hung up and stuck the phone into her bra. The light training clothes didn't have any pockets, So what was a girl to do? So, are you planning to stay up there all night?